We present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a poster seen in a leisure centre, read by Caroline Nichols.
Unfortunately, Slimming World has had to cancel its meetings here on Saturday mornings, as the group is too large for the room.
Thanks to Ross Anderson for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Angela Barnes. And opposite them on my left, Danny Finkelstein and Sarah Kendall. Jeremy, who reportedly fell out over a bill at dinner?
Oh, Lordy. Well, this is the ongoing fallout from the dinner at Downing Street between Theresa May and Jean-Claude Juncker. I suspect it's been in the diary for a long time before a lot of recent events, and they thought, well, we'd just better go ahead with it. It's like, you know, when a friend's having really bad relationship difficulties, but they've booked a holiday, and you say, well, you're not going to go, are you? You say, well, we'll lose a deposit. And you think, oh, God, you're going to take worse hits than that over the next 5 years, trust me. But they've decided to just go ahead and have this dinner. And it all kicked off. Trees got a bit leery. And it all got nasty. And it all sort of leaked out. And then they leaked that they were unhappy with her. And then she did this rather strange thing of making a prime ministerial announcement in Downing Street that she was cross with them. You know, and it looked like something really important. She came out with, you know, with the same lectern in which she announced the election. And she said, we had hoped for a deal with Europe. But I have to tell you that no such undertaking has been received. And she said that secretly they were trying to manipulate the election via Julian Assange and his strange and sinister connection with Piers Morgan and the Illuminati. And she tries to turn every insult into a positive in that clever Thatcherite way. Like someone says, she's in another galaxy, and she says, you poor fool, Earthling! Ha, ha, ha! Your puny negotiators are no match for my laser weapons! And, because Ken Clark famously said she was a bloody difficult woman, and she took that as a compliment, and I thought, probably not really. But the thing is about her, you feel a bit sorry for her, because she's a bit like me in that she's grammar school, which means you don't have the credibility of a comp education, neither do you have the smooth social ease of being privately educated, and you're permanently chippy and not comfortable. She's clearly not comfortable in her own skin. In fact, she looks like she's about to emerge from it, revealing something altogether more terrifying.
Do you think she's a miserable lady, Angela?
I think she... I mean, just watching her try to eat some chips, I think, answers that question. Yeah. Although, you know, at least Ed Miliband looked like he was enjoying that bacon sandwich.
Yeah, she's a funny old thing. I think a seagull was eating those chips and she swooped down and nicked them.
It's a strange accusation as well, isn't it, saying all the EU are going to try and interfere in any British vote. You think if they were going to interfere in a British vote, you think they'd have concentrated their efforts on the one last June, don't you?
I think it will play... the thing is, the more she's winding up the EU, being rude to them, so they're being rude back, and it's all going to strengthen her, because people say, well, God bless your mum, plucky Theresa, she's having a proper rotten time from Fritz. Well, we must all strengthen her end. Come on, everybody, roll out the barrel.
Sarah, do you concur?
Yeah, I think my dad had a really good sort of observation about these meetings and negotiations take months and months and they have to reconvene and it didn't work out. His theory is that where they're meeting, the food is too good. If you want to hammer out a deal and hammer it out quickly, go somewhere where there's crap food. You know, after, like, the first bite of three-month-old roast chicken, you'd be like, I'll give you $200 billion, I don't care. Can I just go?
Actually, when Juncker said that he'd really enjoyed the meal, that's actually having eaten in Downing Street when I knew he was lying.
Who do you think leaked it? Does it count as her to say, oh, they shouldn't have been leaking details of the dinner?
I don't think that's too much of a mystery, Mars. I know even my poor journalistic techniques will realise where it came from. I mean, in other words...
Was it from Juncker?
It might have been, yes. The thing is that she said that she wanted Brexit to be a success, and that actually is the bottom line of the other side. The one thing they can't allow is for Brexit to be a success. So to say we want Brexit to be a success and we think it can be, you're bound to get the answer, no, it can't. So that's where they broke down. It seemed like they broke down on the details. They didn't. They broke down on that.
So they've said, if you want to leave, you have to pay $100 billion. And she's gone, no. And then they've gone, well, then you got to stay. That doesn't work in... Like, you wouldn't go to a hotel and they'd go, you have to pay the bill. No, well, then you have to stay on.
Who weighed in on the debate on their first day at work this week? Anyone?
Repeat the question.
Who weighed in on the debate? Because when I read it out, it sounds very written, whereas it sounded really natural and chatty first time out. So, guys, who were...
Yeah, Miles?
Listen, peeps. who weighed in on the debate on their first day at work this week? George Osborne.
Oh.
He started on a new job this week.
Oh, yes, Evening
Standard.
Yes, it is,
Evening Standard.
Yeah, I mean, you know him. You're a journalist, Danny. How's that going to pan out?
He's enjoying himself, I think.
He's enjoying himself for the job, though. Or...
He said enjoying himself. I thought you said destroying himself. I got excited.
Lovely thoughts. Right. Brilliantly, these are the continuing adventures of plucky laugh-a-minute Prime Minister Theresa May, who this week accused the EU of interfering in the general election after saying that when dealing with Brussels she was going to be a bloody difficult woman, a phrase she's taken directly from a quote by Ken Clark. It's a risky tactic, as you could very well find yourself fighting an election under the slogans "The service at the Garrick has never been the same since we gave back Hong Kong," and "Why is my tie covered in all this egg?" All this follows reports of an uncomfortable Brexit dinner at Number 10, which European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said he left feeling 10 times more sceptical than he had before. When he arrived at Number 10, Juncker presented Mrs May with a copy of the Croatian Accession Treaty and the Canadian Free Trade Deal, suggesting he's never been round to someone's house for dinner before. A Downing Street aide told reporters that the decision to leak the details of the dinner would outrage British voters, not realising that all you need to outrage British voters is to make the background music on a drama series as loud as possible. Also this week, a photo came out showing Theresa May in Cornwall eating a cone of chips with all the natural ease and charm of the survivors of an Arctic plane crash taking their first tentative mouthfuls of Pilot. 2 points to Jeremy. Angela, who had a car crash involving a Ferrari?
Diane Abbott went on to Nick Ferrari's LBC radio show to discuss the Labour policing policy because it's an area of interest to Nick Ferrari, being as he is named after a crime. And unfortunately, she got flustered in the interview, I think it's fair to say, and she repeatedly made... I mean, I'm laughing, but it was so painful. It was like listening to my mum trying to explain what happens in EastEnders. during this conversation with Nick Ferrari, she came up with some incredible calculations about how Labour were going to fund... Well, to begin with, I think it was 10,000 new police officers, then 250,000 new police officers, then 2 new police officers. at one point, I think she said that it was going to cost £80 million to fund 10,000 police officers, which works out as a salary of £8,000. And we're like, come on, Diane, they're not nurses. Jesus. Sort of, initially, I heard the story before I listened to it, and I was like, oh, you know, I feel sorry for Diane Abbott because, you know, it's just that she happens to have the audacity not to be a white man that she gets all this stick. And then I listened to it, and you're like, oh, mate.
She said she got it right in the other interviews. I don't know if anyone's verified that. She did the first 6, and then she just faded out because she was knackered. But, I mean, that's what I would do. I mean, I know you can't be like a normal person if you're a politician because you just say, oh, I can't be arsed with all this. I don't know what I think about anything.
I think she just basically lost the briefing notes. Because I used to prepare these briefing notes for people, and people would either lose them or they would read the whole thing out. So you'd write, you know, here's what to do if somebody presses you, and they'd read the whole thing out and they'd go, if pressed, and then they'd read...
But also, it was a phone-in interview, and it sounded to me like she was on the toilet or something. Like, it just had that kind of sound, like... And I've done that myself when I've thought, I've got an interview with a journalist, but I really have to go to the toilet, and then you take the phone call and you're on the toilet, and you spend the whole interview thinking, I've got to go out of my way to not sound like I'm on the toilet. You don't focus on what you're saying. And it had the kind of fumbling sounds of there was no toilet paper, and, you know, she was thinking, 8 cops, I don't know, 8 cops. And then she's trying to use, like, the cardboard, you know.
politicians need to realise that news people are really belligerent now. I mean, they're in this mould, they've got to catch you out. They used to be ludicrously obsequious at one time. In the early days of TV, they were just like, good evening, cannon fodder. Joining me is Sir Aubrey Important, Minister for Matters Beyond the Grasp of the Common Man. So, Aubrey, regale us with your wisdom. But now they're just rude. I think news people are the sort of people who did very well at university and then never really made anything of their lives. And their friends are all, like, comedians and things like that. They're all rather bitter, you know, and so it's like, just trying to catch you out. And it's like, you know, she should have just said, look, I've been up since 6 o'clock, I've done seven, I haven't even had some shreddies yet, just leave me alone.
When Attlee called the 1950 election, he was asked by the interviewer said, have you got anything to tell us, Mr. Attlee? And he just said, no.
I think Diane Abbott will be able to ride it out. If you think about the 20 years ago, that election, you know, Tony Blair was trying to become Prime Minister, and there's big posters of him with the demon eyes trying to make out that he was some kind of power-crazed lunatic who was a threat to humankind. And it took years for us to realise that was a reality.
Igneously, this is Diane Abbott's LBC appearance this week, described by multiple media outlets as a car crash interview. Some might argue that's pretty good by the standards of the Labour campaign, resembling, as it generally does, not so much a car crash as a burning articulated lorry being driven off a cliff into a sea of pure kerosene. During the interview, Abbott appeared to indicate that under Labour, police officers would only be paid £30 a year. That sum might seem paltry, but don't forget it's topped up by the sense of entitlement that only comes from a job where you can beat up a protester with absolutely no repercussions. Labour have said they'll add 10,000 policemen to the force, which is reminiscent of that nursery rhyme about the grand old Duke of York who had 10,000 men, marched them up to the top of the hill and was then completely unable to explain how any of the costings would work. I mean, it's been a while, but I think that's what Nanny used to sing to us before the men took her away. To Angela. Danny, who's getting them in at the local?
Miles, these are the local elections that have been happening this week. I think they've been held so that Jeremy Corbyn can practice his catastrophic defeat face before June 8th. But the local elections are always thought to be a great sort of indicator of what's really happening. But basically, I always say I don't really believe in real elections. I believe in opinion polls. So real elections are always terrible indicators of what's going to happen.
Well, I'm excited that we're going to have metro. There's going to be these metro mates who are going to be given away free at train stations. Yeah. Before you get your train in the morning, you'll be handed a little tiny mare with a chain which you can pull in an emergency.
I thought a metro mare was just a mare that moisturises.
Does anyone know where the metro mares, where they'll be for? There'll be six new metropolitan mares.
Bristol.
Manchester.
Liverpool.
The West Midlands.
Well, it's like Mornington Crescent. Cambridgeshire.
Cambridgeshire and Peterborough. Mm. Tees Valley.
Yeah. That's my Tees seat. Valley. Tickle Mountain.
Sorry, it's hard to get excited, isn't it, about the local elections when there's a general. It's like having to go to your kid's sports day during the Olympics.
Obviously, we're recording this on Thursday night, so we don't know the results of any. What's John Lewis got to do with this?
Well, that's because the candidate for the Conservatives in West Midlands is former CEO of John Lewis.
That's right, Andy Street, former CEO, who's running for mayor of West Midlands. And this week, Theresa May called him an action man in Birmingham. That's what she called him.
What?
She called him her action man in Birmingham.
Well, he's got no genitals.
Yeah. Yeah. She also muttered, he's a Barbie in Devon. She's absolutely mad. How do we reckon UKIP will have got on last night? By which I mean tomorrow. By which I mean tonight. I don't know. What do I mean?
It's been not very well.
Other than British. Having taken over the Conservative Party, they're not doing very well at all.
Individually, these are the results of local elections across the UK, which have yet to be announced at the time of recording. The contest could give an early picture of whether Labour is facing huge losses nationally, the kind of picture you get at the end of a colonoscopy, just before the doctor sits you down and tells you that if you've always dreamt of swimming with dolphins, now might be the time. Among some potential shocks, Labour could lose control of Glasgow, which they've held since 1980. The most startling thing about this is that if the last 37 years Glasgow has been at least notionally under control, what is it going to look like now? Labour's Andy Burnham, the former Home Secretary, who looks like a child's drawing of a man, is... is expected to become mayor of Manchester, and he says he wants to put the swagger back into Manchester's music scene. Me too, Andy. Oh, those heady nights at the factory, having it large with Bears and the gang. What fun we had. I don't want to brag, but if you listen to the backing track of Kinky Afro very closely, you can hear me being noisily sick into a bin while muttering about maracas. 2 points today. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Angela have 4, and so too do Danny and Sarah. We start round two with an extract from an article in the Manchester Evening News.
A man stripped off and took a naked dip in the Bridgewater Canal in front of shocked passers-by. The man was described as white, about 6 foot tall, and soaking wet.
Thanks to Gus McKenzie and Oral for sending us that. Sarah, who'll be looking for a new way to fill the days?
This is the announcement that Prince Philip is retiring. I saw on the cover of the Evening Standard, it said, you know, thank you, Philip. And they had a list of his top 100 gaffes. It wasn't his 100 gaffes. It was the best 100. Some of the stuff that he said... When he travelled to Australia, he met an Aboriginal elder, and his question was, do you still throw spears at each other?
Well, that's dreadful, because they hate racism in Australia. So there was they suddenly said there's going to be an announcement. Did anyone have any inkling of what it might be?
Well, Twitter went mad, didn't it? And the speculation obviously being that something terrible had happened to a royal, but it turned out he was just retiring. I think it was almost like it was a drill for the real thing, a sort of Braxton Hicks of the news.
I also feel like the Queen is slightly punking Prince Charles, like, oh, we've got a big announcement. Someone's retiring. Someone's a little too old.
Well, some people seem to think that the Queen had called together all her staff to tell them that she'd died, which seemed quite unlikely to me.
In other royal news, what did the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge release earlier this week?
Pictures of Prince William's bottom. Because to balance out the fact that people have seen her lady bumps in public. No, they're suing France for not shielding her from paparazzi.
They all, in addition to the photograph of Prince William's buttocks that they've famously been circulating. They also released a photograph of their daughter playing ahead of her second birthday.
That's a funny name.
Yeah. It is. Well, people are very excited. It's the first photo that we've seen of her since Christmas. Well, that's still more than we see of Prince Charles's elder brother in the attic.
I met the Queen once. When
Did
I was
you?
A student nurse, I met the Queen. And she came to open a ward that I was working on, and we all had to be there. And I stood there in my nurse's uniform with two other nurses. And she actually stopped and said to us, "So, what do you do?"
You should have said, "You first."
Organically, this is the news that Prince Philip is to retire from public life this autumn and take on no further engagements. At last, after a lifetime of towing the line, the poor man can throw off the shackles of duty and finally start telling it like it is. The Duke will not be accepting new invitations for visits and engagements, although he may still choose to attend certain public events from time to time, so you'll still be seeing him at Latitude dropping the usual half pill and watching Groove Armata. This means he won't be able to pitch in with Will's and Harry's mental health campaign, which is a shame, as he'd already offered to open any loony bin they like. Different Sarah. Jeremy, who's bottling out of the booze?
People. Apparently, people. We're not as drunk as we were. It's creeping Islamism. That's what it is. It's Sharia law. Everything that used to be a pub or an off-licence is now a mosque. No, we're all not... People don't drink anymore, apart from those of us who are older and mature and wise. And we know trying to face life sober is a fool's errand. But young people who haven't yet grasped that life is a downward spiral into disappointment and despair and still imagine that one day they'll own a home.
I thought that by the time I was 40, I'd be a sophisticated drinker, you know, supping red wine and talking about the events of the day. I basically thought I'd be French. That's what I thought would happen.
The French very sensibly wean their children on to drink from a very, very early age, whereas we wait until children are in their mid-teens and then let them discover cider in large quantities. It's what the French do. The minute a child is born, they put a little bit of vin rouge on the nipple so that the child is gradually used to it, and then basically they don't binge drink, the French, because they are slightly drunk all of their lives.
Danny, are you in a downward spiral?
Well, I don't drink, actually. If you poured everything that I drank in my entire life into a pint glass, it wouldn't reach the rim. But I've never liked drinking, except Diet Coke, in epic quantities.
Diet Coke's very bad for you because it's full of artificial sweeteners. But if you put rum in it, it's fine.
Look, I think it's great that young people are sort of not drinking that much. But I am worried about how their anecdotes are going to sound in 20 years' time. Like, no anecdote ever starts with, oh, this one time I was so sober. Oh, my God, I made the most rational decision. I knew a guy who was a virgin at the age of 28 and really lovely guy. And I kind of figured out after a while, it's because he doesn't drink. Like, if you think...
Oh, that's what it was.
I reckon so many more of us would be virgins if it weren't for alcohol. Like, just in order to get through the experience... Sex is gross. Like, you've got to have a glass. So I'm amazed that we don't have, like, a natural release of Prosecco every time we mate. Just to get through it.
All that to look forward to, Danny. Quizzically, this is the news that, according to the Office for National Statistics, almost half the British population are now turning their backs on excessive drinking. It's like I always say, everything in moderation, so I do enjoy a bottle of absinthe of an evening, but only ever with a meal. The ONS says that baby boomers are the ones most at risk from alcohol-related illnesses. So long as their children keep the scotch coming, they'll get the house eventually. The trouble is that soft drinks aren't as good. I had a glass of water the other day. It was like a completely flavourless Chablis. 2 points to Jeremy. Angela, have a listen to this.
Record breaker. If you're the tallest, the smallest, if you beat them all. If you're the fattest, the thinnest, if you always win. If you're the fastest, the slowest, if you really go, then you're a record breaker.
Oh, lovely bit of early Morrissey there. Angela. Angela, who wants to break all of the records?
So, this is European Athletics have said that because of widespread doping in athletics in the past, that they are going to rewrite any world records from before 2005 because they can't verify that any records that were broken before that time, that the athletes weren't doped. It's not just athletics, it's all sports, isn't it? It's even Frankie Dettori once got a 6-month ban from horse racing for using cocaine, right? Now, call me naive, but in horse racing, wouldn't it make more sense to drug the horse? Unless you're planning on carrying that thing to the finishing line. I mean, if you are going to drug your horses, you want to make damn sure that the rider's not on drugs as well. You know, cause you know what happens, don't you? If you've got a horse that's on drugs and a rider on drugs, it's dressage. Sorry for Paula Radcliffe. I think there's a compromise that could be met. Like, maybe just every time her world record is referred to in public, you just have to use air quotes. Like, world record holder, yeah. Paula Radcliffe.
Or so-called, like they do with Islamic State.
Yeah.
I'm very suspicious about the date of 2005, because in 2001, I was in a race with Sebco and I beat him, and I think he's trying to eradicate the record. It was egg and spoon. You drop the egg, right? You can't do that. Egg and spoon races for mediocre people. If you're too slow, you lose anyway. But if you're too fast, like Seb Coe, what a fool, you drop the egg. And so I think what he's trying to do is rewrite history.
Where did it take place, battle of the bodies?
in the barn of his farm. There you go.
Oh, right. This is a bit of a showbiz anecdote. Yeah, just the two of you, some hay bales.
No, William Hague was there too.
There was an Irish athlete who went to the doctor and...
now, is this a true story, yeah. Jeremy?
She said, I'm really worried that I'm growing a penis because of the steroids. And the doctor said, anabolic. She said, no, just a penis. Yeah. True story.
Sebaciously, this is the news that European athletics are proposing wiping all world records set for 2005 in order to restore credibility following the sports doping scandal. This is only athletics. Water polo will remain the same haven of poppers and mescaline that it's always been. I can't imagine how a remarkable achievement from more than a decade ago could be completely obliterated, but then you look at the Labour Party and here we are. This does mean that people finally have to believe me when I say that I set the women's steeplechase record in 1987. There will be no way of proving otherwise. Haters gonna hate. 2 points to Angela. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Jeremy.
Miles, this was sent in by Isabel Norris, and she saw it on the Southam College website. It's Science Week, day one, and today the students were able to see and hold some animals, including corn snakes, guinea pigs, a leopard gecko, a Chinese dwarf hamster, and many more. Tomorrow will be dissections in labs 5 and 6.
Danny.
Elizabeth Carmichael Smith saw this on the BBC website. From this week, London gets a new migration museum. It's starting out in a temporary home, but the hope is that within a couple of years it'll move to a permanent...
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Angela have 8, but this week's winners are Danny and Sarah with 10. Before we leave you, here is an email sent to a listener called Patrick by an amateur theatre company in Kent.
We're seeking an actor to take on a role in our upcoming production of No Sex, Please, We're British. Character name, Brian Runicles. Aged 40s. Large part.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Angela Barnes, Danny Finkelstein and Sarah Kendall. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Max Davis and James Tettle with additional material by Jessica Fostercue and Robin Morgan. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Studios production.